So I think rather than read it all the way through, I'll actually go through it verse by verse, because that'll just be quicker. Yeah? Because if I read all the way through, then go back and do the verse by verse rule. Okay? So I'm just going to share some stuff that's just come to me and I've read on this, you know, while I've been preparing. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all that they had done and taught. Let's just get the situation. Yeah? Oh, sorry. Six. Yeah, sorry. Good one. Sack him. Six. Mark 6. You know it's Mark, don't you? Mark 6:30. Thank you for that question. Good heckle. Okay, Mark 6:30. 3:0. Okay, it's after the bit with John the Baptist being beheaded. So we're going, the apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all that they had done and taught. Okay, so the situation is, do you remember earlier, the apostles had been sent out the 12, and we know that they had a great time, because earlier in the chapter it says they drove out many demons, anointed many sick people with oil, and healed them. So they were having a rare old time. And they come back to him, and you can imagine this buzz as they come back, and they say, oh, Jesus, you know, this was happening. Yeah, but my story was even better. Listen, what happened to me? You know, and blah, blah, blah. So that's all going on. They're very excited. They're all around him. They're telling him that. In verse 31, then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. So again, just imagine how chaotic this was. There was probably people that they had been with in the villages. Maybe they followed them back, saying, oh, you forgot to pray for my daughter or whatever. Other people have seen, oh, it's Jesus. Those are the guys that do the healing. So it's just all this commotion. And I love what Jesus does here. After they've done this work, after they've done stuff in the kingdom, they've been obedient, Jesus says, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. That's very caring. It's very sensible. But it's a powerful principle. Sometimes when we're tired, we're tempted to get away by ourselves, but perhaps not with the Lord. You know, sometimes when we're stressed, we get away by ourselves. And I don't know, people do different things to sort of relax now. Some of them are pretty good, and some of them are not so good. And what God is saying, what Jesus is saying here is, come away, but come away with me. Come into my presence. Come and rest with me. And I think that's something, if we can build that into our lives, about that whole thing. I know it's about, we've talked about this before, the whole quiet time bit, the whole, you know, making a place for that. And that's the Father's heart. That's what Jesus wants. That's what he's saying there. Come away with me and get some rest. You know, I will give you rest. I will give you peace. But we have to get into that place with the Lord. Of course, the other side of it is that they have done the work of the kingdom. They're not sort of away from the things the whole time. They've done the work of the kingdom. They've been giving themselves out. They've been spending themselves in the interests of others, in obedience to Christ. And now he says, come away. So, verse 32, they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them, and they ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. Basically, the Sea of Galilee is not a big sea. So if someone sets off in a boat and they're just rowing about this, you know, it's easy to say, oh, there they are. And they just walk along. Yeah, we're still, hello, hello. You know, it's not like they had to sort of run miles around. So they could easily keep track of them. And then they get there ahead of them. Can you imagine what the disciples are thinking? Oh, Jesus, you know, we did all this work and we've been, wow, it was all happening. It was amazing. And now we're back with Jesus and, oh, it's great to tell Jesus good stuff, because he goes, yeah, well done. And it's so good. I love to get an encouraging word from Jesus. It's a bit of a pain with all these people. Oh, he said, let's go away with him. Great, we'll have him to ourselves again. We can learn more stuff. Oh, man. They're there before we get there. So, fair play to the disciples. I think they're going through a bit here. Because when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them. As so often Jesus does, doesn't he? You know, when he sees the sick, he saw... And there's different points where it says he had compassion when he saw how the sick, and he had compassion. He saw Jerusalem. He gets moved by compassion. Because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. It just struck me as an interesting thing to do. He sees a group of people and he has compassion on them. It's more than feeling sorry for them. Yeah. You know, the Father's heart in him that loves those people were just like, oh, these people. You know, what do they need? They probably had sickness among them. They probably had sickness. They probably had various needs. He taught them. It's really important. It's really important to know the word and to allow God to teach us. There's no substitute for that. You need to take time with God, asking him to teach you from the scriptures. You can learn through books. That's being taught. There's lots, you know, there's good Christian books. There's videos and stuff. But you have to apply yourself. Because in order to meet, it's almost like their deepest need was to be taught about the Father. He taught them many things. I'd love to know what we'll probably get an idea from the Sermon on the Mount and other things that he was teaching them. But teaching them about the kingdom and the values of the kingdom. Because he realized that's what they needed. They were sheep without a shepherd. This sheep without a shepherd business, there's a sort of shadow of this in Numbers where Moses says, oh, you know, these people, they're going to be like sheep without a shepherd. And there's a sort of call to the heart of to God's heart to say, send a shepherd. And there's this idea through the Old Testament that there's a shepherd coming. The good shepherd, the true shepherd that's going to look after his people. And there's other parts in Ezekiel where there's bad shepherds. There's shepherds who don't care about their flock. And then in Psalm 23, of course, there's a picture of the good shepherd. Who brings his sheep aside and looks after them and brings them to a place next to a river, you can imagine, with green grass and a place of rest. And that's what Jesus is doing, out of his compassion as the good shepherd. And that's what he wants to do with us. He wants to teach us. We need to turn our hearts and we need to open our ears to him. And we need to be teachable, get the word in. Okay, 35. By this time it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. You see, is it too cynical to say they may see their chance to get Jesus alone again and just have a time with their mate? This is a remote place, they said, and it's already very late. Send the people away so they can go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. It's quite a mixed one, this, isn't it? Because it seems quite caring, and it may well be, you know, well, let's look after these people, you know, it's late, you know, there's no corner shops around here, they're going to have to go somewhere and get something to eat. But I love it, I love the send the people away, so they can, you know. I just think they still want Jesus for themselves, and they want to catch up with their stories and stuff like that. But maybe they are beginning to learn that, you know, the people need feeding and that. Here comes the mind blower. Imagine this. You're out in the wilderness sort of place. I mean, not like full desert, but you're along a remote place. And you have a little chat. Are we going to get rid? I tell you what, Jesus is compassionate. You want to send them home. Yeah, good idea. Go and tell him. Jesus, you need to send them home. We love being with them, but you need to send them home. He turns to them. He says, yeah, they are hungry. Give them something to eat. Boom. Imagine that moment. Imagine them looking at each other. Did he say what I thought he said? Give them something to eat. I love the way that clearly one or two of the accountants in the group work out the problem. look at the numbers, work out the cost of a meal per person, translate it into wages, and then summarize by saying that would take more than half a year's wages. Wasn't necessarily the accountants, but someone who had an understanding of maths. What they've done is they've summarized the problem of that. Good one. It hasn't got you anywhere, but it's an interesting response, isn't it? When Jesus says to us something, do that. That's not going to work, Lord. We haven't got that. That's not going to work. I've got to think about this. It's never going to work. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give them it to eat? Obviously, they haven't got half a year's wages. So this whole conversation has gone a bit sort of silly. Are we to go and spend that much on bread? What they're saying is we've got to go and find all that money and then bring it back and, you know, they may have gone or died or something by then. He turns it back. What have you got? How many loaves do you have? Go and see. Go and find out what you've got. Because what they had done in their calculations was forget that in their midst was the Son of God. See, they're still working on that. But there was a guy in their midst who was pretty amazing. And this is always going to be the challenge to us. It's always going to be the challenge to us. When we consider a problem, and God is saying, we forget that we're dealing with the King of Kings. We're dealing with Jehovah Jireh, who will meet your needs. We're dealing with an amazing God. And sometimes we calculate stuff around, and we almost calculate him out of it. We say, I can't be done for all these reasons. So he says, how many loaves do you have? He asked, go and see. They found out, they said, this must have been a very disappointing moment, wasn't it? Maybe they thought Jesus knew that there was a bread ban around the back or something. But five. And there's two fish. Just so you don't forget, just a helpline. And then Jesus directs them to have the people sit down in groups on the green grass. Green grass. Psalm 23, place of rest. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties, taking the five loaves and the two fish and looking up to heaven. He gave thanks and he broke the loaves and he gave them to his disciples to distribute. And he divided the two fish among them all. There's a few things around this. They sat down in groups of 150s. There's an expectation coming there, and the disciples are being involved in this. They don't know what's going on. They're like, I know he's only got five loaves and two fishes, but I've got to make these guys sit down as if they can have a meal now. Oh. So they're having to step out in faith, even though they haven't got it. But they're having to work with God in stepping out and preparing something that they haven't got. It must have been a very scary time. Stu was talking the other day about faith and fear. They must have been shaking. What if this turns nasty and these people are all set up in all these groups ready to go, and then we're giving out tiny bits of bread from five loaves? But they obey and they set them out. There's a few senses to this, I guess, in terms of the organization. Maybe a sort of, sense of like the tribes of Israel of old, or maybe even some sort of military preparation thing. But the memory that it's going to... hold on, I'll finish this first. He divided the two loaves. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. And the number of men who eaten was 5,000. If you think about the people there and the disciples, and they're thinking about their history. There's an incident, isn't there, in their history where a large group of people were in a remote place and they were fed by God. And it's the manna from heaven. And so this is working on a number of different levels. This is part of Jesus saying, I am God. This is what God does. I am God. There's part of the bringing people along with him, saying, building up their faith, and this is what happens when you work with me. And then there's just part of his compassion. And there's a challenge to us there, where we look at situations in the world and we say, it's overwhelming. We could never do that. We could never you know, help these people or feed those people or whatever. And I think in terms of that explanation from this is, you bring that back to God and God says, what have you got? And then you give it to God to bless it. And then you begin to step out. So there's a huge challenge. It was a challenge to the disciples. It's an even bigger one to us. But looking at how Mark is putting this together, he is putting in these, he's showing that Jesus was putting these points in to point to God. Obviously, the disciples had not joined the dots yet by some way. So then we move on to the next bit. Immediately, another that Mark word, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. When you read John, what happened there was, the guys were so impressed by this, they thought it was another time when they said, let's grab hold of him and make him leader. And that was probably not helped by the fact they were all in 50s and 100s, almost like military companies. And they were thinking, right, this guy's organizing us in sort of military groups here, and he's doing amazing stuff. He can feed a battalion or whatever in the desert. And so Jesus, I think he sort of, you know, like Ross Kemp says, it's all starting to kick off. He's like, get out of here, boys. I'll deal with this. And then it says Jesus withdrew from them before they could actually get a chance because these people were seeing there was something serious going on here. Okay, that's just from John. But back into Mark. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to Bethsaida. And after leaving them, he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went upon a mountainside to pray. Remember, they'd already been tested when he said to them, you give them something to eat. Huge test. How'd you do with this? Maths? Fear? How'd you do with this test? Here's another test. Later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake, and he was alone on land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. This is just a normal thing. It's not like the other storm that came up. This is just a normal thing that if the wind's in the right place, it's hard work. Shortly before dawn, he went out to them walking on the lake. I just find that timing very interesting. I love the way that Mark is so economical with words. You get the feeling, particularly with Mark, every word means something in there. Later that night, so that's just late into the evening, maybe that's sort of, you know, midnight, something like that. He sees them. Now, he went up on a high mountain to pray. It was quite near the lake, if there was a moon. So this is not necessarily supernatural sight. It might have been something like that, but it's natural and logical that he would have been able to see them anyway, because it's not that far away from a high place. You could see a boat. And they're struggling. They are having a hard time. It's testing them as a team. It's testing them. It's testing their strength and everything. Shortly before dawn, he waits. And sometimes, in my experience, the Father does this. You're in a situation and you're calling and he doesn't come immediately. You know he's there with you, but there's something about persevering. I hope I'm not reading too much into the text here, but I just find the time gap very interesting there. So we get the shortly before dawn. So you can see them there. He said, oh, they'll be all right. They'll learn a lot about rowing and stuff. Father, I need to spend this time with you. Keep an eye on them. Shortly before dawn, he went out to them walking on the lake. He was about to pass by them. What? They're struggling. He's about to pass them by. You may not know, as indeed I did not know, or could not remember, that there's a verse in Job that says about God, the one who treads upon the water. And the idea of passing by, of course, there's a number of times in the Old Testament, it happened to Moses, where God wanted to show his glory, but he said, you go and hide in the cave, and I will pass by. And there's a sense here that it's almost another, do you realize who I am? I fed the people in the desert, and now I'm walking on water. Always impressive, but I'm passing by. Maybe sort of later on as these dots come together, as we'll find the dots come together and they start to realize who this guy is. He was about to pass them by, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. They cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. You can believe that, can't you? Immediately, he spoke to them and he said, "Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid." Take courage. His words, giving courage. Then he climbed into the boat with them, and the wind died down. They were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves. Their hearts were hardened. Interesting statement that, isn't it? They had not understood about the loaves. Their hearts were hardened. It doesn't seem that their hearts were hardened necessarily to the people, because they were showing some sort of understanding about those people needing food and stuff. I think the sense here is that their hearts, their understanding wasn't softened. It wasn't open yet to putting these things together and thinking, do you know, this guy is doing stuff that only God does, but he's with us. I love the bit where it says he's about to pass them by, almost sort of showing that, you know, that sense of the Old Testament. But when he sees how afraid they are, he gets into the boat with them. And that's the Father heart of God in Jesus. When he sees their fear, he says, yeah, it's me. I'm with you. Don't worry. I'm right here with you now. This whole thing is showing you that I am God, but I am man, and I am alongside you. I am the one sent from God. Now, like I say, later on, we're going to find all these dots coming together. But it's wonderful to see this jigsaw being slowly built here. You've got to see it from the disciples' point of view, how they're having to put this together. And loads of this speaks to us in our situations. Because very often, I think, I look at my own heart, and I see that it's hard. And it may be situations with other people where I'm making judgments, or I've just said, well, I don't see how that's going to work there. I can't get on with them. I don't know what's going to happen there. And I've hardened my heart, and I've closed my understanding. I've closed my understanding to what God might be able to do. And the challenge to us, we know, we those, you know, have accepted Christ, say we know that Jesus came as the Son of God, totally man, totally God, the perfect sacrifice. But we still need to keep our hearts soft. We still need to, by bringing them into his presence, And saying, you know, search me, Lord. Keep my heart soft. I can so easily get hard. I can so easily start to get into a religious thing where you'll only work in this way. You'll only work with these people. You'll only do this. And it's a constant challenge. And it goes back to, come aside with me, said the Lord. Come and have rest with me. Because in his presence, as we allow him to teach us, he will keep our hearts soft. So, on an individual level, that's what speaks to me about that. And I like I say, the not understood about the loaves primarily was they missed the whole, they missed the compassion, and they missed the sign that he was doing what Yahweh did. Okay, so the final few verses. When they'd crossed over, they landed at Gennesaret, and they anchored there. As soon as they got out of the boat, people recognized Jesus. They ran through that whole region, throughout the whole region, and carried the sick on mats to wherever they heard he was. And wherever he went, into villages, towns, or countryside, they placed the sick in the marketplaces. They begged him to let them touch even the edge of his cloak, and all who touched it were healed. All who touched his cloak, all who reached out, basically. And this is just a personal thing, but this is the challenge I'm left with of this. For all that this speaks wonderfully and so simply of of the gradual revelation of Jesus, the God-man, Messiah. The Messiah who is God, who is man, who can totally represent mankind to God and pay the price. And as God went to the cross and did the finished work, the unique Messiah, not a God, far away, or bringing God right there to be able to be touched, to reach out and touch him. I'm thinking of a lot of things at the moment in the context of where God is, I believe, calling us as a fellowship. And we look around and we think, oh my gosh, there's a lot of problems out there, and we work it out, which is good. But we have to do it, going back to the bread and the fishes, realizing that it's an awesome God that we're dealing with, who wants to bless people, who wants to use his church to bless people. So there's the first thing. It's like a sort of two-way. We look out, we look up. I'll bring the two together. Then there's the challenge to not be hard to what God wants to do. He may want to shake us. He may want to do stuff among us that we're not comfortable with. I'm not saying definite, I don't know. All I'm saying is that, guys, we need to keep our hearts soft, and we need to help each other with that and to encourage each other. I went out to the love running thing today. I ran around before everybody else, did a great time, about 20 minutes. In these clothes, you know, and I haven't changed them, just not sweating. That was last year. I went out to cheer and stuff. And you know what? I really enjoyed it. I actually found my natural, my calling is basically to be a yob. Because as you know, I got a big gob. And I found the perfect place to use a big gob. Marissa is deaf in her left ear, I think. Because it was just all about shouting. I know I frightened some of them, but they woke up. But it was so great, you know. I was just shouting at Al and shouting at anybody around past and just say, you know, yeah. And with some people, especially if they were all in their sort of own pain zone, they're like, oh, yeah, ah, oh, you know. And you could see the effect of encouragement. It's such a powerful thing. We can put courage into each other. We can speak, but we have to do it. We've got a bit of a British thing holding us back in this, but we need to be able to speak to each other and just encourage each other and say, come on. And that will help to keep our hearts soft. And it'll help, I believe, to keep us focused on God and help us to do this thing of reaching out and touching his cloak. Okay, that's it really. That's what I've got. And I know that's quite a sort of, broken up type thing. And I just hope you get from that something of some of the things that I felt were in there. We are going to be tested. We're going to find times it's this sort of bit in the dawn where we're thinking, Lord, we're doing this, but we're not really seeing much. We're not seeing much. We believe that you told us to go. He sent them. He said, go ahead of me in the boat. And there was a scary bit where they were just rowing. And we're going to have times like that. And then we're going to have times where we're able to reach out and touch his garment, and we're going to see healing, and we're going to see people come to Christ, and we're going to see people saying, I want to know about Jesus. And we need to keep our hearts soft if we want the Father to use us. Hallelujah.